Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Ha ha ha!
music from the drum High Noon, which started on the Thunderchild Reserve in Saskatchewan, Canada. We have had the honor to attend one of their powwows. That intertribal honor song was from High Noon's Kenyan record CD entitled Songs for Our People. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yaakitishe Native Center. In today's program, we focus on a very important issue that affects the well-being of all life on Mother Earth. The issue is toxic pollution from incinerators, landfills, and other health-threatening waste disposal methods. One serious aspect of this subject is the generation of electricity from waste incineration. Incineration is now being advocated as a good source of energy, despite the fact that garbage is not a renewable resource, and its use as a fuel does not represent clean, green, and/or renewable energy. Waste to energy, often referred to as resource recovery burn facilities by the industry, undermines the important need for society to reduce, reuse, and recycle the materials and products we humans use. Many incinerators, in order to stay so-called financially viable, require a constant steady stream of garbage in order to produce what business determines to be the amount of energy generated to produce big profits. This results in less reuse and recycling, but results in more pollution and environmental health impacts. My guests today on Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, are the directors of the Florida Alliance for a Clean Environment, Bob and Jan Krasowski. Bob and Jan are longtime activists, and like us at Yaakitishe Native Center, have been involved in energy and environment issues for many years. I had the pleasure to meet them years ago when a number of us in Southwest Florida fought against putting an incinerator in our neighboring county, which sadly was built. Bob and Linda's knowledge about waste management was very helpful to Yaakitishe Native Center when Yaakitishe helped Seminole Indians fight a plan by Collier County government to permit a toxic waste landfill on the site of an independent traditional Seminole Indian village, the home to my friends, the Billy Camp. This proposed dump site would have required the forcible removal of a long-existing Seminole community, as well as endangering the health of predominantly poor migrant farm workers in the nearby town of Immokalee, Florida. Bob and Jan Krasowski's organization, the Florida Alliance for a Clean Environment, has been doing great work here in Florida, educating the public and lawmakers about the need to pursue less polluting and inefficient production practices and better ways of waste disposal that doesn't impact the environment or harm human health. The Alliance is focused on energy issues, especially advocating alternative energy is an important issue here in Florida, in North America, and globally. One special project of the Alliance is their campaign to oppose municipal solid waste garbage burning technologies, so-called resource recovery energy production. We will be talking about this in their petition to the Florida Legislature. 36 years since the first Earth Day and 34 years since the historic United Nations Stockholm Conference on the Human Environment, which brought world attention of the important need to better protect our planet's environment, humankind continues to respect Mother Earth by literally trashing our planet. The modern world is a throwaway society where we humans continue to voraciously eat up the Earth's resources and discard much waste as a result of our consumer lifestyle. This waste, which is often called garbage, is not only often toxic itself, but when burned in incinerators, creates even more deadly poisons, which impact the health of all life, including us human beings. Persistent organic pollutants, POPs, like dioxin, a known carcinogen, a cancer-causing agent, are emitted into the environment as air pollution from garbage burners, many of which are predominantly located in poor people and people of color communities. This is a form of environmental racism. It is an environmental justice issue. This situation is likewise often the case in the so-called Third World, where garbage and toxic waste from wealthy developed nations is dumped in less developed countries whose politicians are more than willing to get rich by accepting waste dumps in their country. I've seen a number of these examples in my travels in the world. Waste disposed in landfills or dumped in the ocean likewise contaminate the lands and seas, thereby poisoning the planet's web of life, which is also our food chain, thereby impacting human health. The Arkansas Native Center and many other individuals and groups around the world are very concerned about a healthy and clean environment. Many of us are working to promote ways to reduce the need for using the vast amounts of energy and natural resources our societies currently use and waste, as well as the amounts of garbage and toxins generated by our lifestyles. One such international organization that I, like today's Wolf Mountain program guests, Bob and Jan, are members of, is GAIA, Global Anti-Incinerator Alliance, also called Global Alliance for Incinerator Alternatives. I encourage all of our worldwide listeners to visit GAIA's website, www.no-burn.org. Again, visit GAIA's website, www.no-burn.org. I would like to now welcome Bob and Jan Krasowski to Wolf Mountain Native Radio.
Thank you, Ernest, for having us today. It's a pleasure being here. I'll let Jan do the initial introduction.
Hello, I'm Jan Krasowski. I am a local art teacher and artist and have always been interested in environmental issues ever since I was a young child. I feel that it's important that every person take a part in preserving our environmental safety and purity.
Thanks, Jan. As Jan said, we both share that interest in the environment. And what we have done as residents of Florida have most recently organized under the Florida Alliance for a Clean Environment to pull people together to work on advocating for clean energy processes as opposed to polluting and dirty energy processes. And we're focused on the Florida legislature, which is now in session, and particularly a situation that has developed where Florida law now encourages garbage burners, incinerators, and to the extent that a community with a garbage burner incinerator is not allowed to remove combustible recyclables from the waste stream going to that incinerator, and then any new incinerators or actually existing incinerators as well, if they have financial viability problems because they can't get the garbage they need to run, they can extract from the combustible recyclables, paper, cardboard, and the like, and burn that. So this interferes with recycling, and also it puts incineration in front of the line as far as being catered to for resource management. And this was last year this law was passed, but this year they've included garbage burning in the category of biomass, and then move the definition of biomass, or biomass is part of the definition for renewable energy resources, which means that the biomass garbage is in competition for funding as a renewable resource with wind and solar and other actual clean energy potential sources of energy, and we're objecting to that because garbage is not renewable. Who wants to keep making the same amount of garbage we have? And it is not clean. When you burn garbage, there's not a garbage incinerator in the world that's a clean burner, so we don't want to be supporting those type of activities. We want to see the state put our resources, our financial resources, into supporting and developing the what it does exist now as opportunities for solar and wind and other clean technologies.
Waste management issues are very important ecological and environmental health problems throughout the world. Waste issues such as landfills, incinerators, and toxic dump sites are also very serious environmental justice issues. Bob, environmental justice is a topic I will ask you to respond to in a moment following my commentary. Environmental justice is basically the principle where everyone, irregardless of race and economic status, is supposed to be assured equal protection under the law for a healthy and clean environment. This, unfortunately, is not the case, especially in the area of waste management issues, both in the United States and around the world. poor and predominantly people of color, so-called minority communities, suffer disproportionately higher environmental discrimination than white communities. This environmental racism is shown by the following discrimination in environmental law enforcement data reported from the Congressional Research Journal and National Law Journal. For all the federal environmental laws aimed at protecting people from air, water, and waste pollution, penalties in white communities were 46% higher than in minority communities. 3 out of 5 black and Hispanic Americans live in communities with uncontrolled toxic waste sites. Under CERCLA, Comprehensive Environmental Response and Compensation Act, more commonly termed Superfund, in more than one half of the 10 EPA regions, action on cleanup at Superfund sites begins from 12% to 42% later at minority sites than at white sites. About one half of all Native Americans and Asian Pacific Islanders live in communities with uncontrolled waste sites. Under CERCLA, abandoned hazardous waste sites in minority areas take 20% longer to be placed on the National Priority Action List than those Superfund sites in white areas. 60% of the total black population, more than 15 million people, live in communities with one or more uncontrolled toxic waste sites. At minority hazardous dump sites, the Environmental Protection Agency, 7% more often chose the less preferred, quote, cleanup method known as containment. This is the capping or walling off of a dump site. The preferred cleanup method of getting rid of the waste, known as treatment, is ordered 22% more often than containment at white sites. Although socioeconomic status plays an important role in the location of commercial hazardous waste facilities, race is the leading factor. 3 out of the 5 largest commercial hazardous waste landfills in the United States are located in mostly black or Hispanic communities. These landfills account for 40% of the nation's estimated commercial landfill space. 60% of the total Hispanic population, approximately 8 million people, live in communities with one or more uncontrolled toxic waste sites. And finally, penalties under hazardous waste laws at sites having the greatest white population were about 500% higher than penalties at sites with the greatest minority populations. Minority areas averaged $56,000 per penalty site. White areas averaged $336,000 per penalty site. Yad Kiddushi Native Center is an intertribal grassroots organization, is very active in the environmental justice movement, and have been honored to be involved in the establishment and leadership of the environmental justice movement. In 1991, I was a delegate to the historic First National People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit, which produced the important 17 principles of environmental justice. Several of the principles focus on waste issues. A final aspect of this important question deals with the issue of how more wealthy communities, again, predominantly white communities, send their garbage to poor areas, such as in Appalachia, black neighborhoods, or on Native American reservations. Here in Southwest Florida, where we live, the rich, predominantly white coastal communities have contracted with poorer inland counties to truck waste to their landfills. It seems the more affluent also produce more effluent. I know of several very poor counties in America that have built incinerators just to handle the waste from other areas. This situation is also happening internationally, where the United States and European countries are shipping their waste to third world nations. Many politicians of less developed countries, which are cash poor, are eagerly willing to turn their nation into a toxic waste dump at the expense of their people's health and well-being of their country's environment. Bob, what are your thoughts on this important topic of environmental justice and waste management issues?
I agree with your comments there, and that's known to be true in the past, and it seems to happen whenever possible that if there's a perceived need for new incinerator, they never seem to wind up in the fancier communities with the bigger houses, and they're always in industrial zones or near the less affluent communities, and that's been the case in the past, and I don't expect it to change too much. The more people watch out for this, though, it's been very effective when people keep an eye on this. The people that try to get away with this kind of stuff are less likely to be successful.
One thing I would say, that if you are an activist and you're just trying to stay active, let me put it that way, and there is plans to put a landfill or an incinerator in your community, that a lot of times they do the paperwork on them is very, very sloppy, and it's very easy to challenge their permits. At least it is at this point. Now, they are probably going to change that. I would suggest that if you do have something of concern, please take action on it.
Well, of course, that's really an important point, Jen, and I thank you, because really it's one of the last resort people do have is community people power. However, I will say, under the so-called Bush-Cheney administration, I use the word regime, and the Environmental Pollution Agency in particular, a lot of the federal environmental and even worker safety laws have either been so watered down that they're not enforced at all, or they've been totally removed or renamed, that are ineffectual. I specifically am talking about what Bush-Cheney has done with respect to the so-called Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, National Environmental Protection Act, NEPA, used to call for environmental impact statements. It's getting harder and harder for a lot of communities to take on some of these giants. And also, one of the changes in the law, if I understand things correctly, and I'm not a lawyer, but I believe, again, primarily under the Bush-Cheney government, it's made it harder for grassroots community organizations like your organization, the Florida Alliance for a Clean Environment, or Yad Kishon Native Center, to actually go ahead and file Freedom of Information Act requests to get data and documents. And companies now are able to even threaten lawsuits against grassroots community organizations that years ago that wasn't so likely. So it's a very scary thing, because even now, under this hysteria of national security, it seems that the federal government of the United States is really clamping down on providing all sorts of what used to be routine environmental information under the disguise of that it's a privilege.
Oh, Ness, yes, that's an excellent point, and it relates to the situation we're specifically dealing with right now, with this Florida Energy Plan. A part of this plan is to change the process for siting power plants. And what it does, it combines several steps of the process and also diminishes the amount of public input by not requiring, as in the past, meetings in front of the public. Like if a community government decides they want to place an incinerator somewhere, then they may or may not, in some of those steps, have a public meeting, or they might. These were always excellent opportunities for the people to come forward. In the 80s, the mid-80s, when we opposed incinerator here, it was through that process that gave us 14 days to appeal the issuance of a permit. Now, I haven't seen the complete, what's the being offered completely in this round of laws, but it's all moving in that direction that you refer to. And another element of it is that what used to be public information now is somewhat restricted, in that companies can provide contributions to the promotion of one type of process over another. Those companies don't have to be known to the public and can be an anonymous contribution. So that's a bunch of, you know, nonsense, yeah. And so that concern that we've had as far as open government of the people, the basis for a democracy, a credible democracy, is that the people have to be informed so they know what's going on, is being eclipsed by these power brokers now that are getting more and more into control with and further away from our being able to know what's going on.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, Stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, oh, tell me, heaven is on the tier. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's a call that Peter is cold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you will look for yours on earth. And now you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Jump.
Get up, stand up.
Jump, jump.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up.
Don't give up the fight.
Life is your right.
Get up, stand up.
We can't give up the fight.
Stand up for your rights.
Lord, Lord.
Get up, stand up.
Keep us struggling on.
Don't give up the fight.
Yeah.
You're sick and tired of your ism, schism, game, dying and go to heaven in the Jesus' name, Lord. We know and we understand, Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light.
What you gonna
we gonna stand up for?
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
You better get up,
stand up
in the morning.
Give it up,
stand up for your right.
Stand up, run.
Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Don't give it up, don't give it up.
Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up.
Stand up for your right.
Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Get up, stand up for your rights, a great reggae song from Bob Marley off his CD entitled Legend, the best of Bob Marley and the Wailers. In our Wolf Mountain Radio studio today are Bob and Jan Krasowski, spokesperson for the Florida Alliance for a Clean Environment. We've been talking about the serious ecological, health, and environmental justice concerns around waste management issues. Much of our conversation has focused on the situation here in Florida. However, as listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio have heard me say many times before, many of the cases we discuss on the program, although located here in Florida, are very similar to many other situations happening throughout the world. In many ways, Florida is a third world country. State government is pretty much run by a small elite of corporate and government politicians. Having a governor whose brother is a president of the United States, whose national energy and environmental policies have destroyed the environment, deceived and lied to the public, and restricted government openness, has certainly helped Governor Bush do the same here in Florida. Agribusiness, such as citrus, sugarcane, and livestock production, phosphate and rock mining, forestry, tourism, residential development, and fisheries, are the industries that wield tremendous political power. Environmental protection, health and safety laws, often go unenforced. In many ways, Florida is looked upon as a last frontier to develop. This has greatly impacted a once beautiful and clean place to live. The state's increasing population, considered to be one of the highest in the United States, has in itself created a serious waste management issue. Bob, I'm interested to hear your comments about dealing with the state environmental waste management policy. Your current petition to the Florida legislature urging clean renewable energy and sustainable resource management policies rather than garbage burning technologies such as incinerators I'm sure has given you insight into how corporate lobbyists and politicians craft legislation. My question for you is to please comment on what I call the nonsense of government policy making.
We constructed a petition. We sent it to all of the senators and through email, and then mailed hard copies to some of the senators, the ones on key committees. And we're doing the same with the House. We've addressed certain House members, and ultimately we'll be appealing to the governor and the cabinet to recognize that garbage is not a renewable resource, and to recognize that incineration is landfilling in the sky. Okay, so much heavy volume of heavy metals and toxic chemicals and are emitted through these facilities, and to recognize that we have alternatives, and that we, the people that have signed on to our petition, it's a statewide effort. We have national representation from various groups. We also have international people have signed on, that we want the responsible, honorable legislators to put their efforts into clean energy and clean processes first before any consideration of other methods. You know, what has occurred in the last couple of years, and you made a good point, that the environmental groups are so overwhelmed with so many issues, it's like you're getting hit from every direction. They've had to focus and prioritize and have been working on some things, and in the last year in particular, some of this legislation that identifies garbage as biomass, biomass is renewable energy, and burning biomass is renewable energy, and therefore can compete with wind and solar and all the good clean energies, that of the traditional environmental people with full-time lobbyists up in Tallahassee haven't had this on their list. So we here, with our experience and background, have decided to organize the state.
As you were talking about the incinerator, I remember you and I and Jan going up to a local Sierra Club meeting one evening. You were telling me about how, if I heard you correctly, a lot of the incinerators, they have incentives to actually burn more and really in fostering and encouraging more waste instead of trying to reduce the waste stream and instead of recycle, that it gets to be a point where a lot of these incinerators, because they're businesses with municipalities involved, they are profit generated and therefore encourage more garbage. Would you talk about that as well?
Yeah, well, waste incinerators are, well, in the law, the existing law, and which is being built on this year, which we're trying to put an end to, they are encouraging communities to consider building incinerators if you need a new landfill or if you want to expand your landfill. So they're encouraging people to choose that option. Okay. Now, with the flow control that I mentioned before and the ability for an incinerator to take away from the recycling program if it has a need, that supports the whole incineration industry. But we look at incinerators, they're waste enablers. If you have an incinerator, people can continue to waste as much as they would want, and then they push this. Actually, the incinerator is a volume reduction, so they reduce the volume by taking out the air and stuff and spewing stuff into the atmosphere and then putting the toxic, high-concentrated toxic ash into landfills so they have, like, buy themselves a little more room. But it doesn't address the problem. In Lee County, where they built an incinerator, the per capita garbage rate went up. So incinerators are not a solution. They're an enabler for the bad behavior. The solution is to look at what's in the waste stream and systematically refine the production and the packaging and the transportation element and to reduce those materials needed to get what we need or want to our homes, and then make sure that that thing that we're using is a recyclable, reusable.
Mother, Father, sky will soon be gone forever. We hear the eagles cry. We know the reason why. And now our tears are coming true.
Cherokee singer-songwriter Dave Trezek, his title track song, Save the Land. One of the important priorities needed in society is a change in attitude on how we humans continue to exploit the Earth's energy and natural resources. Our global society doesn't seem to give much thought about conserving or slowing down the quantities and rates of resources use, either through reuse, recycling, or more efficient manufacturing processes that will require less materials and less energy needed in the first place. This, of course, would greatly reduce the amount of waste generated. Modern society's consumer throwaway culture is jeopardizing the health and well-being of all life on our planet. We indigenous peoples have always been careful not to harm Mother Earth. We are taught not to waste natural resources or to pollute the environment. Under current consumer culture, people are enticed to buy new rather than trying to repair something used. Components and other electronics are a new waste which have toxic components that get released into the environment in landfills. When Wolf Mountain Radio needed to upgrade our studio with a new computer, we had to search far and wide in order to find a place to refurbish the old computer system, which we were then able to donate to another community organization that didn't need all the capabilities and speed of our older studio computer. What is needed is for manufacturers of products to be responsible not only for the inputs used in the manufacturing process, but also the end result of their product when it's no longer usable. I'm talking about the concept of producer responsibility, Bob, would you please talk about this principle?
Let's start with the computer, because electronic waste is a huge issue now, as you've mentioned before. Well, every manufacturer of a computer sold in the United States would be responsible to take that computer back at the end of its life cycle. What is now what we call an unfunded mandate, when that computer, you're finished, like you were earlier mentioned, when you're finished with that computer, you have to find a way of disposing of it, and much of it goes into a landfill or something like that. Well, under producer responsibility, rather than us as citizens paying for that landfill and disposing of it that way and having that time bomb laying in the landfill, the computer would be brought back to the place where you brought it, and then they would take it back to the manufacturer. So if this is an equal playing field, and we'll use Dell and Gateway as examples, okay, two great companies that make some good equipment. Okay, so we have Dell and Gateway, right? Okay, so everybody has the same condition. So with them, in their manufacturing, realizing that 3, 5, 7 years from now, that machine's coming back, they will design that machine to be easily disassembled and made out of materials that they can reuse in the manufacture. So we close that loop, and it becomes much more efficient and clean. And we do have refrigerator collection and all the white goods and that kind of stuff. But there are a number of products, like maybe furniture, and of products that are manufactured, automobiles, mattresses. So it will be a cyclical thing, and we can, rather than have a one-way use of materials, it would contribute to more of a reuse. And along those lines, many toxic materials that are used in production, mercury, and there would be systems analyzed and then designed and set up so those elements that are used in production of various things would not leave the plant. They would stay in a closed cycle, and that's the whole deal, is to keep stuff in closed cycle.
For the benefit of our worldwide audience, when we talk about landfills and incinerators, a lot of times people don't realize what we are talking about is very serious hazards and toxic waste that pollute the air, land, and water. Would you briefly let some of our listeners know what are some of these pollutants and how serious they are to not only human health but to the other life, the animal and plants?
I suppose first I should say that incinerators, which we are opposed to, include pyrolysis machines, and those are like two-part incinerators where the garbage is heated up in one part and then gas is ejected into another chamber where it's burnt. And you still, and then plasma arc, which is used to destroy some very bad, like hazardous, toxic waste. It's kind of expensive. But all of these high-temperature burn type technologies fall under the category of incinerators as far as you know we're concerned. So that's the general term we're using. Okay, when material goes into an incinerator or any of these machines, it's heated either through external temperature or flame, and then all of them, whether if it's immediate or through another chamber, emit a myriad of chemicals. There are so many chemical emissions. There are the chemicals in each individual item, and then there are the combinations that are made when you burn items together. Then there is the formation of chemicals as the air plume cools as it goes out of the stack. There are different chemical formulations that occur at different times, even though there's been a great improvement in regards to incinerators over the last 15 years as far as emissions. There are none that do not emit large quantities of chemicals, and included, I have a page, I'm not going to read all these chemical formulations, but there's a couple of hundred chemicals identified, and then along with those are dioxins and furans, which are very much of great concern to health professionals and environmentalists. And those dioxins and furans, many of them now are kept from the air, but they're collected in the filtration system and therefore wind up in the ash, the bag ash from the tower of the incinerator, and then also the bottom ash from the actual burning chamber, and then these toxins are concentrated. Then along with that, because you cannot destroy matter, you can change its form to gas or liquid or vapor or solids, and along with that, so you have all the heavy metals, lead, mercury, cadmium, those type of things, all of those are in that waste stream, and they get vaporized, and to a great extent, when you look at the air emission permits for these facilities and research it and look for different opinions on it, there are tons and tons of lead that's emitted, mercury and cadmium, all those things get emitted from the smokestack or are concentrated in the ash. So incinerators emit chemicals and heavy metals, and the ash is a problem. And then, what were you going to add, Jan?
I was going to add that the particulate matter that comes out of incinerators is also in the tonnage area. And the thing about the particulate is that there are larger particulates and there are smaller particulates. And the particulates are especially damaging to children. There's been many studies that have shown this. They're also damaging to the elderly. That now they are connecting particulate matter to heart disease
and
respiratory health, and they're also damaging to our animals and also to our plant life in Florida and around the world.
You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitichi Native Center. Yat Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal, culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kitichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kitichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat Kitichi's Kinonwatakwisin Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat-Kidichi Native Center, write to Yat-Kidichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat-Kidichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakusin, to all of our relations.
Well, dear friends, we are nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We again encourage all of our worldwide listeners to become active in any way you can to help protect Mother Earth and the well-being of our life. For those interested in the topics we discussed in today's program, please visit Global Alliance for Incinerator Alternatives website, Gaia's website at www.no-burn.org. That's www.no-burn.org. Yat-Kidichi Native Center supports Gaia's mission statement, which I now quote. Gaia is a worldwide alliance of nonprofit organizations and individuals who recognize that our planet's finite resources, fragile biosphere, and the health of people and other living beings are endangered by polluting and inefficient production practices and health-threatening disposal methods. We oppose incinerators, landfills, and other end-of-pipe interventions. Our ultimate vision is a just, toxic-free world without incineration. Our goal is the implementation of clean production and the creation of a closed-loop, materials-efficient economy where all products are reused, repaired, or recycled back into the marketplace or nature, unquote. And that was adopted December 2000 in Johannesburg, South Africa, at the United Nations World Summit on Sustainable Development. We shall conclude today's program with a flute song by Michael Spirit Hawk off his CD, Eye of the Hawk. The name of the tune is Nature's Song. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinoa One Talkmasin, to all of our relations. Thank you.
Thank you.